Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What is up, everyone? We're back for episode number 70 of the Deep Drive podcast. We're in the final stretch of the season. You know, a lot of the division races and playoff situations have kind of sorted themselves out, with the exception of, you know, one division at this point with the NL East, though the Mets have kind of taken control of that division a little bit by getting that game in the loss column and still having the head-to-head advantage. But, you know, this month has kind of been very conclusive in the sense that teams that were in pursuit of playoff spots or in pursuit of divisional spots, they fell off, or the team that they were chasing finally got hot, corrected themselves, which makes for less dramatic fall baseball, but, you know, it still is worth discussing. So, James, you know, we I guess we'll start with the American League here, focused on a divisional series that was played between Cleveland and Chicago, where the Guardians basically won the American League Central. I believe they're up 7 games in that division. Yes, 7 games in that division. 7 in the loss column, it's 7 on the dot, and they have a 99.9% chance to win the division. They took the season series against the White Sox, so they're essentially 8 games up.
So
the
episode like 2 weeks ago, we were talking about how the Guardians have 5 against the Twins and 4 against the White Sox, and 3 against the White Sox, and their season is like those 8 games, right? They sweep the White Sox, 3-game sweep, after they win the series again, the 5-game series against the Twins, 4-1. So they go 7-1. They're now 67 losses, and the White Sox have 74. They're 7 games ahead of them in the loss column.
Well, 8 because of that tiebreak. They won the season series.
This division's over. We thought this one would come down to the stretch. You know, it would have appeared that way, but Cleveland's broken away. And I mean, at this point, they'd have to basically lose out to lose the division.
Yeah. And kind of in an interesting sense, I mean, I'm not saying that Cleveland was a bad team coming into the season, but I don't know how many people.
Nobody thought they were going to be this good. I remember we thought they'd be like a fourth place team. Obviously, in this division, there's the Royals and Tigers, so maybe third. But even then, like, that was like an 81 win team, if even, you know, like a 500 team, at best, at least what I would have thought. But then here they are, you know, they might win 95 games. They'd have to win out to win 95, but they might win 90 games, and that's somewhat shocking.
Yeah, going 7-5 will get them to 90 wins for the first time since 2019, I believe. And considering, you know, they traded, you know, if you look at the players on that team and compare them to now, they had Lindor on that squad. That's a notable loss. You know, Kluber was still on that team, though he was injured, wasn't a main factor on that ball club. Same thing with Carrasco. Clevinger was a big part of that team. You know, they had Bauer for half of the season there. They had Franmil. And, you know, I think they traded for Franmil that deadline. And so that's one of those big pieces they expected to, you know, one of those trades that they expect to get more out of. And Franmil didn't necessarily pan out, and they're still looking. I mean, they traded basically an all-time great rotation and turned it into surplus value. All of those guys have gotten worse or had reasons why they haven't produced the way they should have.
And then the one that they kept has turned out to be
the best of
the best one.
Right. And there were concerns about Bieber with the velocity drop, but Bieber has become, I think Bieber is safely, you know, in that top 15, top 10 starter conversation. He's putting up numbers similar on a per rate basis to his 2019, 2021, where he was throwing a little bit harder. He's gone less to his fastball. He's more of a breaking ball first guy. We have a plus breaking ball. And this is a league where guys are throwing their fastballs less. You can opt into throwing those pitches more, and it's more common. Teams, you know, the Guardians are a very forward-thinking organization. This team has accomplished a lot. This organization has accomplished a lot. I know a lot of people are not the biggest fans of the Guardians' play style offensively, but it's worked. We've seen them do things like this. I think it's, you know what? I think it's fun. I think Stephen Kwan is a fun player. You know, if people want to say Stephen Kwan.
I know there's going to be like the new age, you know, people who are like, you know, put the ball over the wall more than the Cleveland Guardians do, but they're fun. And they will slap hit you to death. Similarly, like we were saying last episode, to the Mets, only they're more likable in a sense. But yeah, if you look at what Shane Bieber's done, you know, he's gotten hot at the right time. They've won his last four starts, which has been huge because they've been in two against Minnesota and one against Chicago. Those are huge starts, his last three starts. 7.2 innings, 8 innings, 6.1, 8, 7, 7, 6.1, 7, 7. Like he's going out there, he's giving you basically 7 innings per start of just, you know, one run basically every start,
if you want to expand this sample and include, you know, game against Baltimore when they were still in the playoff contention, a game at Seattle, a game against the White Sox, a game at Toronto.
You're looking at what, 1, 2, 3, 4,
those are 8 starts of a 1.88 ERA.
And against 7 teams in the American League playoff contention.
Right.
And the
averaging
Kansas City Royals.
He averaged over seven. Well, oh yeah. And he averaged over 7 innings to start. He didn't get rocked. I mean, people have always had the narrative with Bieber. And part of this is because of that playoff disaster he had in 2020, that had he pitched in any other division, if he this or that or whatever it may be, he would not be a good pitcher, or he's only good because he pitches against the Central. And I don't deny that pitching in the AL Central is potentially easier in terms of quality of opponent, but you can't have a sustainable 71 ERA minors, or, you know, you can't have sustainably great production over an extremely large sample simply because you're good against bad teams. I just don't think that doesn't make any sense statistically, right? You're not only pitching against bad teams, he's pitched well against very good competition. I mean, a start at Toronto and he goes 7 innings of 2-run ball and strike out 6 and walk none and give up 0 home runs. I mean, I don't really know. He's such an underrated game one starter. I think a lot of people talked about, you know, oh, what if you have to face Manoa or Gausman or, you know,
but
Castillo.
No one's saying, you know, you're gonna have to face Bieber.
And Bieber's tough, and McKenzie is tough too. McKenzie right now, he topped off, and I believe he had a great outing against the White Sox yesterday, or maybe had been in that series.
Yeah,
it was not yesterday.
He threw 8 shutout 2 days ago.
Yeah, he went 8 innings.
Oh, no,
not shutout.
He threw 8 innings, 2 runs, no walks, 13 strikeouts. Yeah,
which is, you know, in my opinion, that's better, no walks versus no earned runs. But, you know, a 19.6% strikeout to walk percentage, you know, he gets hit particularly hard, but he doesn't give up enough damage that you're concerned that he's going to get crushed in a playoff game.
Yeah, and I mean, since the beginning of July, McKenzie's thrown 100 innings in 15 starts, so over 6 innings a start, 6.2, that would be 2.25 ERA, 2.83 FIP. He's really turned it on in the second half here and kind of, you know, he's becoming one of the best pitchers in the American League, especially given how young he is. He's what, 24, 25. Definitely like a scary 1-2 that isn't being mentioned enough. I think they're flying under the radar, especially given what Gausman and Manoa have done in Toronto and then what Ray and Castillo are for Seattle. And especially now with George Kirby and Logan Gilbert, that's a scary rotation in Seattle, but I think Cleveland is pretty close, especially in a 3-game series.
Yeah, I don't think it's crazy to say that, you know, you look at that 1-2 punch the same way you look at these other teams in terms of the top of the rotation. Yes, the
offense, other than the Mets.
I was talking about the wild card.
Yeah, teams. I know, but I think you can actually compare these two to any 1-2 punch in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Except for the Mets.
I mean, I think you could say that about any team. You really can't compare any team's 1-2 to whatever. Right. But I will say this, you know, if people are saying, well, you know, the Guardians offense isn't necessarily great, which I agree with, they play remarkably good defense. They are a pretty good base running team in terms of position player war this season. Notable AL contenders they're ahead of. They're ahead of Tampa Bay. They were ahead of, you know, the White Sox, Baltimore, Boston for most of the season. They sat comfortably above San Diego. You know, they remind me of San Diego in the sense that both of them don't hit very well. But the difference is Cleveland's a remarkably good defensive team. They're a better base running team.
San Diego has great pitching.
But do they have, okay, how do I put this? If you look at the rotation, Clevenger's really struggled this year.
I'm talking about in a short series, you're looking at Snell, who's been just great the last 2-3 months. He's really turned it on.
Snell, Darvish, Musgrove.
And Darvish and Musgrove. And then Musgrove, yeah, who hasn't been as good since he started the season off really well, obviously. And Darvish has been, I think, quietly one of the best pitchers in the league this year. Not really talked about much. He had a huge start last week, I think, where he threw like 7 shutout and threw a bunch of strikeouts. I don't remember against who exactly. But so you look around the league and basically every playoff team has a formidable 1-2 that can, you know, win you a wild card series. And I saw someone rank them. I didn't like look too much into it, but I think that'd be an interesting thing to do at some point. Just because of how short the series are and how much starting pitching matters in a 3-game series.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess my point more so is I've mentioned that 6 seed in the American League's an easier route, you know, facing Cleveland and then the Yankees versus facing Toronto or Tampa in the first round and then the Astros in the DS. But I will say, you know, it's not because Cleveland isn't very good. Cleveland's a good baseball team. I think the Rays and the Jays are better. I think they're also, those teams came into this season far more equipped to go out and compete than the Guardians were. The Guardians were not a team that was anticipated to go out and do this. Cleveland was not a team that was necessarily at this point in the timeline. They were 1 year removed from a disastrous, you know, 2021 where they established themselves, hey, we're rebuilding. They've built up the bullpen. They've built up that top of the rotation. I think we talked about this in previous podcasts, talking about how, you know, the Guardians are probably going to start looking to how they can fill in those middle spots in the rotation, get more quality arms in there. Cause we've talked about,
well, I mean, yeah, but then you look at it at the same time, you know, you'll get Daniel Espino up in
right
a year or so, not even maybe.
Depends on how healthy he is.
And yeah, but even if you don't, you already have 3 guys who you can kind of trust to throw a lot of innings, stay healthy, and be great with Bieber, McKenzie, and then Quantrill, who's actually had a really solid year despite the lack of strikeouts. It's almost the way that they play offensively. Not a lot of homers, not a lot of strikeouts, just winning.
Yeah, and it works for them. You know, we can question the sustainability of it, you know, as we get more years of this kind of group of guys. But I don't think Cleveland is stupid enough to go out and try to say, yeah, I don't think Cleveland's sitting here saying this is the best we'll put out over the next 3 years. They've got more guys coming. You know, they brought up Cody Morris, and I know the peripherals haven't been great for him, but he's kind of shown a little bit of promise there. The ERA is good. The peripherals are not, but in AAA, he pitched pretty well. He got a lot of strikeouts. You know, he's 25. He'll turn 26. He'll have his age 26 season next year. Has a decent four-seam fastball. They seem to be able to take guys like McKenzie. You wouldn't say has elite stuff. Same thing with Shane Bieber. I wouldn't argue he has elite stuff at this point in his career with the velocity he's at right now, but they're getting results and sustainable results. So I look at Cody Morris, maybe a guy they can turn into like a 4 or 5 guy, kind of like a better version of what they're getting from Plesac and Savale. If Quantrill's your 5, if Morris becomes a solid 4, if you have, as you mentioned, if you have, you know, their farm come in and kind of give you a 3 starter, you know, with I mean, we know this team can put together elite rotations. I mean, this is the same team that in 2018 rolled out that dominant rotation. You know, we've seen this team be able to do it. The track record is there. But, you know, shout out to the Guardians, because I would argue, you know what, in terms of organizations, you look at the Royals, they're a shit show. The Tigers are kind of finding them, trying to find, you know, themselves. They, I believe, recently hired a new president of baseball operations because they were a shit show with Al Avila running the show. If you look at the Twins, they're meh. I don't know how I feel about them organizationally. You know, it feels like they get injured a lot. You know, maybe that's an organizational thing. Maybe that's just a luck thing. And then you look at the White Sox, we know they're a shit show. So I look at Cleveland. They're the best run team in this division. The AL Central is not a division of teams that will spend. You're not going to be worried about teams, you know, crushing you in the financial department to the point in which you can't compete. You know, you're not, there's no New York Mets. There's no New York Yankees, Los Angeles Dodgers, even Texas Rangers type team that's going to spend stupid money and bring in some superstar player to change the division. You know, we saw that with Minnesota with the Twins with Correa, but he's probably leaving after this year because he's had such a strong season. So you don't really have to worry about those things. They've set themselves up for a pretty strong run at, you know, winning AL Central titles consistently, kind of like how they did in 17, 18, 19, and this year. So we'll 2016, of course, another year where they won the fucking pennant. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think Cleveland is heading in the right direction, especially given that people didn't expect this from them. They were not supposed to be good this year. They're supposed to be entering a rebuild. And here they are, you know, even just making the playoffs, I think is a huge success for this franchise this season, especially given, you know, Lindor was gone. Bauer obviously is gone. You know, Carrasco they traded, Clevinger they traded, Kluber they traded. Like within the past even 3-4 years, there's been so much turnover, but yet they're still so good. It helps with how well they did in the Lindor trade, even though Jimenez has obviously not been as productive as Lindor. He's pretty damn close. He's had almost six. He's going to put up a 6-win season. Which is just incredible given what he was doing in New York, what they've been able to, you know, turn him into. And then, you know, you look down the American League wildcard race, the Blue Jays are getting hot and the Mariners are falling off a little bit. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch to see who ends up actually getting that one seed in the wildcard, the fourth seed, and gets to host Tampa Bay. I know there was a report, not gets to host Tampa Bay, gets to host the other one, but Tampa Bay would be it right now. I know there's been a report that Toronto would be willing to start Manoah to try and get that spot. I don't know how I feel about that, really, because I think you might want to save him for the actual wildcard games, but these teams really seem to be depending on this home field advantage. So we'll see what happens in the American League. Baltimore now is only 4 games out. They were 5-something the other about a week ago, and even with them losing so many games, you know, they lost a series to the Tigers, lost a series to the Blue Jays, which you can't be losing those type of series, especially the Tigers, if you're trying to make the playoffs here. But they beat the Astros last night. We'll see what they can do in the coming weeks, in the final stretch of the season, because it's possible that they still make the playoffs.
The problem is, you know, the Rays started sliding a little bit. They didn't play, you know, they played a tougher part of their schedule. I know they beat the crap out of the Blue Jays last night, but they were, you know, sliding a little bit, hadn't played their best. I believe they lost series to the Yankees. They lost series to someone else in between the Astros, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, that was an opportunity for them to gain ground, and they kept losing. You know, if you look at that Tigers series, that's going to end up haunting them a little bit, because I think, you know, you look at those Tigers, if you were to swept the Tigers, you're probably 2 back of the Rays right now. You don't play the Rays head-to-head anymore, and I believe the Rays might have won that head-to-head series. They've always played the Orioles well, so I'm just assuming that. Maybe I'm wrong. So you're maybe 5 back when you account for that. They do play the Blue Jays, which is, you know, they play them one more time. You know, maybe,
you know, they don't play them well, but, you know, if they can maybe catch lightning in a bottle, win a couple games there, you know, I think they have a 3-game series, right? So if you win
right
2 of those 3, you gain a game on them. You win all 3, you gain 3 games on them. That would be huge for the Orioles. So there's definitely a possibility, even if it's low. Whereas with like the White Sox and the Twins, I think the Twins might as well be eliminated, being under 500 at this
point. Yeah, they have a 0% chance to make the playoffs, according to Fangraphs. So they're out.
And the White Sox still might have like a, you know, 1 or 2% chance, but I just don't think it's going to be them. It almost seems like unless Baltimore, you know, does something crazy here, that these teams are set. The six teams that will be playoff teams in the American League are set, whereas in the National League, there's still some movement with Milwaukee being just 2.5 games back.
Yeah, Milwaukee, again, another team I kind of talk about the same way I talk about what the Orioles did. I mean, they've had opportunity after opportunity to fucking get back in this thing, and they just, like, the Phillies lost, what, five in a row? That should be your opportunity to put yourself within a win. And they're three back in the loss column of the Phillies. You're three back in the loss column of the Padres, who had a miserable month of August, did not play very well after the deadline. The Brewers collapsed. They didn't play as well in the second half. You know, if people want to say it's, I don't think it's because of the Hader trade. I think it's because, you know.
No, it has nothing to do with that.
Right. Hader sucks anyways. He's been terrible. So if they had him, this problem might have gotten worse.
Shit that the Dodgers are doing is fucking insane. They're 104-46.
And I believe they have a six-game series against the Rockies to end the season. So they'll be able to stat pad that win total a little bit. Maybe
if they want to.
Yeah, if they want to. They can cross 110 wins. They're projected for 111. I think they'll get to that 110 win threshold.
The best team since the Mariners, I think.
Yes, because the Mariners won 116, and I don't think there's a team that's won. I remember the Red Sox won 108.
The Red Sox won 108.
Right.
But I don't think there's been another one. Maybe in like 2004, 2005, but I don't think so. Mets Braves is kind of looking like the Mets are going to win that division easily. Now they got three against the Athletics here, so they should be able, you know, if they win the games they're expected to win, they should win their next five and then go into that three game series with the Braves that we've been talking about. But the Marlins and the A's are very winnable series,
and remember the Braves essentially have to sweep that series because of the head-to-head thing. The Mets, if they take two, if the Braves take
if
two
the Mets
three,
win one game, they win the head-to-head.
Right. So the Braves are playing, you know, they've got to do a lot of things have to go right for them. The Mets just kind of have to right the ship. They just can't have a historic collapse type, not historic, but they can't have like a horrific stretch of the season here. They just
got
to.
I mean,
play
they've got
baseball.
What 11 games left. You can't go 4-7.
Right. And even if you're going to go 4-7, beat the Braves, right? Just beat the
and
Braves.
And lose to the Nationals.
Right. If you beat the Braves, you'll win the division. And the Braves, they're in more desperation mode. They kind of need the A's to do a job. They need them to go in there. They need to go in there. And
yeah, but the thing is, like, if the Braves don't win the division, they might be set because you get the four seed. You get San Diego, who's kind of falling off a lot. But, you know, three-game series, anything can happen.
The thing is, even if, again, it's as simple as, you know, a 60% chance to get out of that first round, it means there's a 40% chance you don't versus the Mets have on 100% chance to play in the NLDS. Right. And I know you're not, like, suggesting it's easier, but, you know, the Braves, definitely there's that added incentive of you don't want to play with fire, man. You really don't. And the Mets, you know, credit to them. You know, people are going to say, well, the Mets have an easier strength of schedule. That's why they're going to win the division. Well, they play the same games. You know, they play the same games. And the Mets have to play the Yankees every year. The Braves do not have to play the Yankees every year. So, you know, the Mets, they have the same. I would argue the Mets have a slightly harder strength of schedule just because of that one fact.
The Yankees aren't that good.
Playing the Yankees versus playing, I believe the Braves play the Red Sox. I mean, who would you rather play in 2022? Like that's a swing, right? Like that's
right.
The Mets have a harder schedule.
The Mets might also play seven against the Dodgers, and the Braves play six against the Dodgers, or vice versa. Like you never know what.
Right, but the AL East, they always so the way it works is the Mets always play the Yankees. So the Braves always
there's
play
always
the
a rival. Like every NL team has an AL team that they have a rivalry with, even if they're sometimes a little bit artificial, just so that the Yankees can play the Mets. The Dodgers can play the Angels, the Giants can play the A's, and the Cubs can play the White Sox. All those cross-town rivalries. And, like,
the Orioles and Washington, right?
Yeah, Orioles and Washington, Marlins and Rays, stuff like that. But, you know, it kind of is what it is with that. I don't think it really makes that big of a difference.
Right, no, I'm not saying it does. I'm just saying, like...
You can't, like, use that as an excuse if you're the Mets, if you don't win the division. Like, this is...
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm saying more so, like, if anyone wants to say the Mets are only going to win this... Or, you know, they win this division because the schedule is easier. Like, is that really winning the division? Yes.
Maybe their schedule is easier now, but it's been a little bit more difficult. It'll even out.
Right. My point is, you know, this type of stuff evens out, you know, the Braves, in my opinion, look, the way I see it is, you know, not to discount the Braves, they've had a great season. You know, the Mets have had an also great season, but, you know, here's the thing. if you didn't get off to such a terrible start in the beginning of the year, you're probably close to this division. You know, obviously they played very well ever since that. But the Mets never really took their foot off the gas pedal. The Braves just played really good while the Mets were like good, but not great. You know, I'm not going to sit here and crown the Mets yet because the division's not over. One game in the loss column, things can change like this. You know, the Mets lose two straight and the Braves win two straight. And this divisional odds of 78% for the Mets and 21% for the Braves is going to shift dramatically. But you know what? These are two teams right here that I think would be the one seed in the American League. Maybe. I mean, I'm looking at the Astros.
The
Astros
I don't know. I think the Astros probably still do. They're probably going to win 105 games.
Right. I mean, I guess it depends on what division you throw them in, whatever it may be. But they,
I don't know, because Houston's really good. Like,
yeah, but I mean, I think I could take the Braves. I could sell Braves or Mets being the Astros. I think I could sell that talking point.
I don't know. I think there's a really good chance it ends up being the World Series is one of those two teams against the Astros.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's either the Dodgers or an NL East team. I don't want to write off the Cardinals, but.
I think the Cardinals are pretty damn good too.
I think they are. I
don't know.
They have to play a wild card series.
We'll see what happens. Like if the right guys get hot, you know, talking about the Cardinals, they have both of the NL WAR leaders, the top two. Goldschmidt, I think, will win MVP. Right now he probably does deserve it, but things can change in 2 weeks. He'll probably win it anyways. Pretty much no matter what, which is actually kind of stupid, but. It is what it is there. Like, Goldschmidt is only leading Arenado by 0.1 war, only leading Machado by 0.3, and only leading Lindor and Freeman by 0.4. So that can change, especially with the way that Machado and Lindor have been swinging, at least recently.
Also, you could make a feasible, not a concrete argument, that Alcantara should be thrown in that mix.
Of course.
Depending on how you view ERA versus FIP for production, which is a completely different argument, but... you know, I agree on the sentiment that Goldschmidt has not run away. The offense is great, and I want to respect that, but he hasn't necessarily run away with his award.
Especially given that he's had like the worst defensive season of his entire career.
Yeah,
it's been bad.
And on top of that, you know, we're kind of entering with the MVP debate. A big talking point is going to be wins above replacement in the American League. It would be kind of weird to not use it for the National League because we'll look at the offense. So,
I mean, the shit that Aaron Judge is doing is unreal, though.
Oh, like, of course. I mean, I think
like even a month ago, I was thinking, you know, I was on the Ohtani MVP train. I thought, you know, what he's doing, given that he plays both sides, you know, all of that, that he should win the MVP. It's Judge. Yeah. And I don't care. I don't care if he wins the Triple Crown. It doesn't mean anything to me as far as his MVP case goes, which I think I don't understand fans who are like, well, if he wins the Triple Crown, is the MVP? If not, it's Ohtani. That's a really stupid argument because like 0.01 in batting average doesn't mean shit to me.
Yeah, if Xander Bogaerts hits .317, Aaron Judge hits .316, oh no, Aaron Judge isn't the MVP. Like, that has nothing, doesn't make any sense. I don't think the Triple Crown, the stats really matter in it. It's just a cool award, I guess. It's kind of like one of those things where, like, it's like winning the batting title, you know?
It's cool, but it shouldn't matter for your MVP case.
Right.
What should matter for his MVP case is that he has 10.7 war, which is the best season we've seen since Bonds, just F4, on an F4 basis. You can make an argument since Betts missed games that, you know, he was bet on a rate basis, but I just don't care.
Yeah, if we're doing rate basis, I mean, it doesn't really matter to me.
Like, then you could say Soto was better in 2020 because it's a rate basis and he had a, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, Soto, I believe, had the last 200 qualified 200 WRC plus in about 40-something games.
Judge will do this unless something drastic happens in the last couple weeks of the season.
And you know what? One final point with kind of like wrapping the MVP thing on my end. Obviously, you know, if you have any, you know, things you'd like to say extra, you know, the way I see it is, you know, if you want to say that Shohei Ohtani's value is so great that it accounts for, you know, how great is the two-way player value, right? You know, there are a lot of articles out there that discuss this, and a lot of the math points back to like half a war or maybe a war. In the same vein that we would say war, the error bar for it is about half a win to a win. You know, if you're within half a win or a win of someone, you can reasonably claim they're around the same player. How are we going to sit here and say that, you know, a two war gap is now just subjective. You can make a subjective claim to boost someone else's value. You know, there's not math. A lot of the people claiming this aren't doing math to support it. They're just saying it, right? They're just making the claim that it, that value should be closed up, or that, you know, one is more historical, therefore it should win the MVP. But again, if, and this kind of ruined the argument, because now that Judge is on a pace to win the Triple Crown and hit 60 home runs, you know, now that's the best argument for some people, because that's become the historical one. I don't think the MVP is about history. I think the MVP is about who is the most, who is the best player in baseball, right? Value comes from production, right? How good are you? I don't care if you're, what you're doing is just like DeGrom, what he's been doing is historic. I don't, I think he's, Framber Valdez set the record for most quality starts in a row,
and he's
ever.
Not the Cy Young.
And he's not gonna fit, he's not gonna get a single MVP vote, right? If we want to talk about history, historically speaking, in the history of baseball, there have been more two-way players than there have been guys who have done what Framber Valdez is doing. Obviously, two-way players are more impressive, but if we're talking about rarity,
and right? That's such a stupid argument.
It is. It's a dumb argument.
And, I know that's your point. But,
yeah, but shout out Framber Valdez.
You look at the American League, and a lot of people would argue that McClanahan should win the Cy Young. It's got to be Verlander. It will be.
Yeah, Verlander at this point, you know.
And I know some people are like, oh, it's his age. Like, no, it has nothing to do with the fact that he's 40 years old. That's not gonna, it might get him extra votes with the Baseball Writers Association, because they don't know what the fuck they're doing. But as far as like whether he deserves it or not, it's because he's so good. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's old or coming off an injury. He'll win comeback player of the year too, I'm sure.
Yeah. The only reason it ever became a debate was that he had an IL stint.
But then he came back from his IL stint and fucking shoved. So.
Right. And then everyone besides Cease in that discussion. I mean, McClanahan had an IL stint. Who else was in that discussion?
Valdez didn't.
Yeah, he didn't. But Valdez, it's weird. Valdez is such a weird case, because it just feels like you can't pick him over Verlander, because if the argument's ERA, you can't pick him over Verlander.
The thing about Valdez that's so interesting, though, is like if you value the fact that he's so steady and consistent, then maybe you can make the argument. And I know there are people who do, because like there's people who say like, oh, I'd rather have a chance to win every start. Valdez gives you a very, very good chance to win every single time he steps on the mound.
The way I see it is Verlander and Valdez should, in my opinion, finish one. You could argue maybe Bieber, but I would go, I would take, you know, Verlander. And then I think Valdez should finish somewhere in that top 3 to 4. I don't think Valdez should be left off top 5. I would put him over McClanahan. You know, if you want to say, well, ERA doesn't matter nearly as much, or ERA matters this amount or whatever, the F4 just straight up has Valdez better than McClanahan. I'm pretty sure the other variation, RA9 WAR, agrees with that. He's pitched more. He's going to end up with almost 200 innings. I think Bieber also going to end up with nearly 200 innings. Cease, I think, is a compelling case, but he's just not better than Verlander this year. You know, peripheral wise, yes, but I don't care about peripherals for the Cy Young. I care about your ERA, your FIP, your innings pitched, game started, you know, how many strikeouts do you have, all that stuff. I'm not going to be looking at your Sierra if there's a noticeable ERA and FIP gap. So going to side with Verlander there.
I mean, definitely agree with that. In the AL, the rookie of the year was interesting for a little while, but it'll definitely end up being Julio Rodriguez,
right,
who's so good.
Yeah,
I mean, the things that he's doing, he's the best player on that Seattle team. And you know, in the NL, we
Harris or Strider,
rookie of the year, it's gotta be Harris or Strider. It's an interesting argument. They're teammates, so it doesn't really matter that much. At least to me, I'm like, oh, well, the Braves fans are gonna be happy anyway, so who really cares? Yeah, it's,
you got,
it's impressive what Strider's done, especially given that he, you know, wasn't really expected to be this good.
Also, this is his second professional season in baseball. That's the next thing. He played his first pro ball season last year. This year,
he's older though. Is he like 23?
Yeah, but still, I mean,
was he a 4-year guy in college then?
He might have been. Last year, he was 22. I mean, he turns 24 soon. So, okay. He's dealing with an oblique thing. I think that's I definitely think that's just managing his
phantom.
Innings.
Yeah. Phantom stint. You know what's so funny to me is I have never in my life seen a manager get put on the Phantom IL.
La Russa.
It's actually fucking hilarious to me.
That one's obvious.
That that La Russa is just like it almost seems like they're firing him without actually firing him.
And they got a clean house, man.
I know there are people saying, I think John Heyman said this yesterday at some point where he might have tweeted it. He was like, you know, I would expect La Russa to move into a front office role and, you know, so that they could hire a new manager without actually firing him and make him like some kind of, you know, made up associate or whatever. Just so that, you know, obviously so that they can move a new guy into there. Manager spot.
I know he might not have much influence, but I feel like putting him anywhere close to player development, roster
and baseball operations.
Yeah, I feel like that's the same. That's like if I just set a match on fire and just put it right on top of my desk. I have a wooden desk. I have all my equipment here. I just sat it right there. It's like, all right, we'll see what, you know, I don't have anywhere else to put you. I'll just put you right on my desk. The White Sox got a clean house, man. Like, Rick Hahn's got to go. Everyone's got to go, dog.
Ethan
like,
Katz can stay.
Yes, but that's it. Like, dude, everyone's got it. If I'm Ethan Katz, I'm getting the fuck out of there. You know, I'm finding another job, dude. I'm going.
And
I'm
there are teams else. That would take him.
You know what? Find one of these up-and-coming teams, dude. You know, maybe go to the Phillies. I know the Phillies are a shit show, but go to the Phillies, dog. At least you spend money and, you know, you'll be an okay baseball team. Go somewhere. Go anywhere. Get the fuck out of it. I guess Baltimore's already good pitching wise. Go to like fucking Minnesota. Go anywhere, dude. Anywhere. I know Minnesota's not even that great. Just get out of there. You got to get out of there. Go to fucking, you want to go to Texas or maybe Seattle or Seattle's pretty good pitching wise too. I'm just trying to think what are some teams that just don't have good pitching coaching or don't have great. Go to St. Louis. Go to St. Louis. That's what you should do. Ethan Katz, you don't have to move much. Just go on down to St. Louis. Go play for a storied franchise. Or not play, go coach for a storied franchise. They need the pitching development. They kind of stink at that. Go fix Jack Flaherty or some shit. You know, the Cardinals fans will love you if you just, you know, make everyone throw sinkers because they have the greatest infield defense I'll ever see in my life. Exactly. They're going to have Mason Wynn and, you know, they're going to do this and that. Like, just go. Get the fuck out of there. Get out. Go. Leave.
We can talk about, I mean, just with Flaherty and how he's – kind of not been the same the last couple of, I guess, years now.
Yeah, last year his ERA was fine, but this year he's just bad. He's just bad.
Yeah, I don't know how to explain it. And obviously there's still potential there, but we'll see. Like, if the Cardinals can get prime Flaherty in the playoffs, they're dangerous.
Yeah, I don't think they will, but, you know, if they do, yeah.
He pitched pretty well yesterday, I think.
Yeah, he's just a weird pitcher. I mean, he walked quite a few guys, which is a little concerning.
A bunch of strikeouts, though. Yeah. So,
the concern is just the consistency. What Jack Flaherty am I getting? Am I getting the one that pitches and gets, you know, loses command? What's the velocity going to look like? Even in that start, his velocity fluctuated a lot. Early on, he was sitting 90, 91. He revs it up to 95. You're like, okay. But, you know, dude – the Cardinals, they're a team that, you know, we both know they're kind of that weird tier between like those top tier teams and like, oh my gosh. I think
you could almost say that they're kind of on their own. I'd put them, like, if you tiered the MLB teams right now, I'd go Houston, LA, New York, Atlanta, New York Mets and Yankees, both New York teams.
Yeah, I would throw both.
Are kind of in that top tier. Those are like the top five teams in the league, right? And then that second level, I'd go, you know, it's Seattle, it's Toronto, it's the Cardinals, and it's the Guardians. And I think everyone else is at least, I think everyone else is at least a tier below them, including the Rays. I don't think they're that good. I don't trust the Rays. And I know this is like, it's really, you know, it's really irresponsible of me to do this, not trust the Rays. I don't trust them.
I get it. No, they're a weird team because there's, you know, they've really taken a step back from last season this year defensively. We talked about this where they're just not the team they were, and it was kind of like a weird unit, but they pitch very well. The offense has been better, so I trust them to go out and make noise in October. I trust them to be around where the Mariners
I think they're gonna lose to Seattle, so I think it's a quick run for them.
But, you know, it's that's a coin flip, right? You know, these matchups are coin flip. And I kind of see it as like, do I think the Rays are a team that can, you know, get to the ALCS? Yeah. Do I think they will? No, because I'll have to play the Astros in the first round, most likely, unless they fall to the sixth seed.
Right. And
it's kind of the same
playing
way.
The Astros, I almost feel like playing the Astros before the ALCS is a death sentence.
Right. And I feel the same way kind of with the with the Cardinals in the sense that, like, if they played not the Dodgers in the first round alongside playing a wild card series in that first round, which could be against Philly, like facing Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, like that's not fun. You know, even in St. Louis, that's just not fun. You know, that.
And I think they host the whole series, right? It's all right. Three games are in the same
city. Even
if
you're playing it in St. Louis, it's not fun.
Yeah, I don't know. But isn't it all three games are in the same city, but you play a home game on the road or something?
No,
like that?
I think that was only – I think, no, it's like the wild card from 2020 where it's just – you're just the home team the whole way through all three games. But, you know, like the Cardinals have probably – you know, you couldn't reasonably put a better than like 53, 54, 55 maybe even percent chance of them beating the Phillies. So there's a good 45% chance you don't make it to the NLDS. And then against the Dodgers, you're not going to be favored. So you have a really low chance against the NLCS, which is kind of the death sentence for the Cardinals there. Just they didn't play well enough to get that bye. They're going to have a tough first round matchup. They're going to have a very, very, very tough, daunting NLDS matchup if they make it to the NLDS. Whereas for the Rays, it's the same situation, right? And this is why I feel a little bit better about, you know, whoever that sixth seed in the American League is going to be in comparison to the other two wildcard teams, because I feel like you might be favored somehow in that first round. Even if it's slightly, you'll be favored, and your odds against the Yankees are better than your odds against the Astros, even though I do think the Yankees are better than any of the matchups they'll get in the wildcard round, because you can't get Houston in the wildcard round. And, you know,
yeah, I don't want
you know, but if you're Seattle, right? Like if I'm Seattle, I'll probably have, you know, kind of similar to the Cardinals and Phillies. You're not going to see yourself at like a 30% chance only to beat the Yankees in a 5-game series. You'll probably see yourself in that 40 to 45% range comfortably. And you'll take those odds when you're a team that's, you know, the lower seed, right? Whereas the Dodgers are going to be heavily favored against the Cardinals. Like, you know, it's not going to be close, but we're going to see maybe a 65% chance.
Oh yeah, definitely. Dodgers. Like if you're in odds, I'd say that the Yankees, you were talking about the Yankees, right? And the Mariners.
Where it's going to be not
paid. Where it'd probably be like, you know, they'd be minus maybe 150, 160 to win the series. Whereas the Dodgers would probably be minus 200 at least. But I think that's good. So we can wrap up here. Thank you everyone for listening, and we will see you in episode 71.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.